Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Swing for the fences with the Fence Authority. They've been providing the Delaware Valley with fences for almost three decades. With four stores throughout the region and one of the largest inventories of wood, vinyl, and aluminum fencing, the Fence Authority makes your next fence as easy as one, two, three. Do it yourself or get it installed with the best workmanship warranties in the country. So swing for the fences at the Fence Authority. Your new fence is waiting at fenceauthority.com.
It's Mike Shope.
Last night at 12:30 in the morning, I ate a can of mushrooms.
I did.
Pieces and stems, if you're wondering. As opposed to buttons, it was pieces and stems, which will be my next year's fantasy football team name.
Pieces and stems.
Pieces and stems.
And the Bulldog.
I should be ashamed to admit this publicly, but whatever. How long have we been doing this? I'm a junkie. I can't be trusted.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
For the record, often, usually even, the mushroom cans are small. They're not even like the size of the bean cans.
Right.
They're like half that, if even that. They're tiny. So amazing they're able to get both pieces and stems in a can so small. Would you not agree? Would you not say that?
I would. It does... I don't want to say begs the question. I mean, we've got a guest waiting on the line. Why are the cans so small?
I don't know.
We not to be trusted with more mushrooms than that?
Like, we don't need more than that?
What is the...
I don't know.
It's an odd one.
We'll look that up later. Joining us now on the West Her Hotline is Matt Harmon, receptionperception.com. Always a thrill to have Matt on the show. I mean, one of the most well-respected guys in the game. I know I can say that safely. Matt, Mike, and Chris here. Thanks for being back on with us.
Always good to be with you guys. Honestly, I was enjoying your conversation much more than whatever I'm about to say. I mean, that was you guys had me captivated there, so I think I'm just about to bring down the vibe at this point.
I doubt that. Riveting. I know it was riveting. Sure it was. Well, generally, Matt, receivers this year, consensus is very different than it sounded for the last couple of years, if not, say, the last five. There have been amazing players to come out of the draft at that position. This year, it's different. I mean, you're charting these guys and as far in on it as anybody. Is that how it sounds to you, A, and B, is it accurate?
Yeah, no question. That is kind of how I feel as well. I mean, I think there are some quality players this year. Like, there's no doubt about it. Actually, the farther I get down into kind of the guys that I think are going to go on day two, I think there's a lot of nice potential dart throws. Now, I think that's obviously a different selling point than what we've had the last few years. I mean, it just straight up, you're not going to find three guys that I think should go in the top 10 picks. I think you're only going to find one guy that in that guy might play cornerback who should be a top 10 receiver in this year's class. So it's not the group that we had last year when we had Marvin Harrison, we had Malik Nabers, and we had Roma Dunze, you know, and honestly, like a Dunze and Harrison, I think those guys were, you know, situations are situations, but they were pretty much outproduced and outplayed by guys like Brian Thomas Jr. and Ladd McConkey. You know, I don't know that we're going to have a group like that this year, but I do think there's a lot of interesting quality pieces on day two, day three. So if you're a team that's looking to fill out your wide receiver room, I think this is a reasonably decent class to look for number twos and number threes. I just don't think you're going to have a lot of guys that I would grade in as, you know, they're ready made to come in and contribute and start, and by the end of the rookie seasons be number one wide receiver.
What do you think Hunter will be, should be in the NFL? You know, recognizing that he probably will dabble on both sides, but there's some risks that come with that, chief among them injury. If you're going to play, you know, 1.5 times as much as the average receiver or corner, then you're on the field that much more, and who knows. But should he be someone who focuses on receiver, in your opinion, Matt?
Yeah, look, I mean, in terms of what he will be, you know, since I started charting Travis Hunter, you know, and for full disclosure, like, I don't watch college football during the season. I'm sure I've said that over the course of my time coming on the show with you guys, because as I always say, you know, the NFL keeps me busy enough, and I'm trying to remain a happily married man. I think it would be a pretty tough sell if I said to, you know, Mrs. Harmon, hey, you know, we're going to blow a whole nother day on football, one that doesn't have anything to do with my job. So I don't watch college football during the season. So, I mean, I knew who Travis Hunter was, obviously. I'm not that unplugged from mm-hmm. the situation. You know, I knew he was a two-way player, obviously a Heisman Trophy winner, very celebrated collegiate player. But going into charting him, I didn't really know what to expect as a wide receiver. And even you just, like, do the base research on it. You know, Andrew Berry, the Browns GM, made a really good point at the owners' meeting, I think it was this week, where he said, you know, people tried to compare him to, like, previous two-way players, like, he threw out Champ Bailey. And, like, look, Champ Bailey, I grew up watching him with the Washington football team. I mean, he was an incredible player. You know, he was a two-way player in college. He had 775 yards was his most yardage gained as a pass catcher at the collegiate level. Travis Hunter was fifth in the FBS this year. Like, the production is just different. You know, I went into it saying, like, okay, maybe there's going to be some snaps of him playing wide receiver, whatever. No, the guy's a full-time wide receiver. He's playing over 100 snaps in 11 of 13 games, 100 total snaps in 11 of 13 games in college mm-hmm. football last year. That is crazy stuff. So you look at him as a wide receiver, whether he's going to be able to do both or not. I mean, number one, we've just never seen somebody do it at this level to this degree already. So is he going to have to be an outlier to do that in the NFL? Yeah, he's already an outlier, man. You know, like, he's already proven to be somebody to buck the trend. So he would have to buck another trend, obviously, to do that in the NFL, but I think that is what he's going to attempt to do. I think it's what he's going to want to do. By all accounts, that is what he's hoping to do. So, you know, far be it for me to tell another man what to do with his career. But I will say this. If he chooses to play wide receiver, he's an incredible wideout. 97th percentile success rate versus zone, 97th percentile success rate versus press and reception perception. Full green route tree, runs at every route on the tree, so you can – do honestly more with him than what Colorado did last year, because I think a lot of what they were doing was in an attempt to preserve his body. Like you said, physically, that's the hardest part of this. He also, in addition to the separation, he has truly rare catching ability, great hands, great ball skills. He tracks the ball like a corner at the catch point. So incredibly smart, instinctive, rare athlete that if he chose to focus on wide receiver, my comparison for him is like prime Odell Beckham. That's who he reminds me of. I think he obviously, if he chose to play wide receiver, he'd instantly be one of those like tier one prospects in the NFL draft.
I mean, some people thought Odell Beckham was good. So that's, I mean, there's at least some hope for this kid. Matt Harmon, that didn't mean anything, with us on the West Her Hotline, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. You know, there are some names where maybe the Bills would be inclined, probably not in the first round. But before we attack a couple of those guys, Matt, let's set the Bills up. You mentioned last year's class. It's 9 of the first 34 picks are wide receivers last year, including Keon Coleman, who was 8th on that list, McConkey 9th. I do want to mention Jaden Higgins in the course of this question, because I think I saw you tweet a comparison maybe between Higgins and Coleman. I mean, how do you think it went? I think yourself and a lot of people were saying, like, fine maybe if he's a slot receiver. But that didn't really happen, and you had just sort of a mid-rookie season here from Coleman.
Yeah, that's kind of how I would describe it. It was a mid-rookie season, you know, not bad. I don't think he's a bad player. And, it's funny, when you talk about draft prospects and, you know, you say, hey, I think he would be best maximized in the slot, that doesn't mean I think he's going to be useless as an outside receiver. I just think, again, if you're going to try to get a guy like that to be a high-volume player, you're going to make him the most efficient producer as possible. I do think a move to that kind of jumbo slot receiver, and I mean, we're talking about big, big slot. Like, Cooper Kupp's a big slot receiver. Chris Godwin's a big slot receiver. Keon Coleman, I was talking about this with James Coe today. I mean, he'd be like a a big ass slot receiver. Like, he's a big, big slot. You know, same with Jaden Higgins, who I do think is very comparable to that to that Keon Coleman profile. Another guy that was probably he was used as an X receiver in college. I think would be best maximized as a slot, or and this is where I think the Bills can start to kind of maybe expand if Coleman is up to it, expand his deployment, because like Keon Coleman's got Khalil Shakir in his receiver room. Khalil Shakir is going to be their primary slot. He should be. He's a great player that they paid. I love Shakir's game, but you can do things where those guys are working in tandem, in stacks and bunches, where Coleman is an outside receiver, quote unquote, but he's off the line of scrimmage. You're still getting him away from press coverage. You're putting defenders in conflict in the terms of like playing tight press man coverage on him. I just thought last year it was pretty much very basic straight line X receiver stuff, mm-hmm. which he can make some plays because he's a ball winner. But I think in terms of getting him open and more efficient targets, I think there's some ways they can continue to expand his deployment. And like you mentioned, I think Jaden Higgins, a lot of the same feeling with him as a prospect.
So what sort of player should the Bills, like looking at their receiving core here, had to remind us that Curtis Samuel is still on the team. He had a very weird year. It seemed like he was injured maybe and hindered for three quarters of the year, and then sort of found a little bit of his game, I think, as the year went on, Matt, but still kind of an unfulfilling season. But he's here. Coleman's here. Shakir's here. They've added Josh Palmer. We'll certainly want your thoughts on him as a player moving forward, but they really haven't replaced Amari Cooper, unless you think Palmer is replacing Cooper, in which case then they haven't replaced Matt Collins. Like, they're down a body from last year, and I wonder if there's a skill set out there in the draft that they should be looking for.
Yeah, I wonder where they're at with Curtis Samuel, because by all accounts, he was having a great camp and a good offseason, and then obviously this is just, unfortunately, as a Curtis Samuel guy, this is the classic Curtis Samuel story, as he just picks up an untimely injury after another untimely injury, and then he just doesn't get like full. This is exactly what happened when he signed with Washington. Honestly, in the first offseason there, he dealt with some injuries, and it just was, like you said, perfectly said it. It was an unfulfilling first season in Washington. Similar in Buffalo, he picks up these injuries close to when camp's about to kind of close, and preseason's coming to an end, and just never really truly gets in phase with the offense. And, kind of was very gadgety in his usage. I'm wondering if they want more from him. We'll see about that. The Josh Palmer signing, to me, that seems like a Matt Collins replacement, or maybe like, in their view, like a younger, more maybe perhaps explosive version of Matt Collins. I think Josh Palmer is a nice dirty work player. I think he runs some pretty good routes. Like, is he a true full field separator? I don't know about that. I'm not quite as high on Palmer as maybe some other, services that chart separation and things of that nature. But I do think he's a useful – I'm going to say this about a lot of these Bills receivers. Useful players that have their roles, they're just kind of very narrowly defined, I guess, in terms of how they're deployed and should be used. So when you're thinking about the Bills receiver room going forward, I still think they need – or they could, let me put it this way. I don't think they need, but they could use one more guy that can really beat man coverage on the outside. Is that Curtis Samuel? Like, I think that in Samuel's best years, he has been a guy that you could play at flanker and you could use off the line of scrimmage and move him around and have him beat man coverage. But I just wonder where they're at with him. So if you're looking into the draft, there are some guys that I think will go on day two that sort of fit that more vertical X receiver bucket that I think they're still they should still be shopping in. I'm thinking about Trey Harris from Ole Miss, who's probably more of like a developmental guy because he's coming from a goofy collegiate offense. He's got a little bit more of a stripped down route tree. But man, there are times where he stacks defenders really well on go routes, and he can kind of be that man coverage presence that they're missing right now. A little bit further down the line, Elik Eomanner out of Stanford is another guy who very mistake prone at the catch point, to put it nicely. He's got issues in contested situations, but does show you flashes of being a man coverage player and is a pretty good blocker as well, which, in a run heavy offense like Buffalo's, they probably value. So there's definitely some guys for them if you go further down the board in that X receiver bucket, but players like Jalen Knoll, who, is probably a vertical slot player. It seems like they're kind of overloaded with slot players right now, but he would really bring some of that speed and verticality that I think they're missing right now.
Very good. Matt Harmon, our guest here on WGR. How many receivers would you guess go in round one? I've seen four or five. I've seen a mock draft with one, not including Hunter. I'm sorry, not including Hunter.
Yeah, not including Hunter.
Yeah, it'd be two at the minimum, right? The very minimum if you do include Hunter. How many do you think deserve it or will go in round one?
I think the over-under should be set at 2.5 if we're not including Travis Hunter.
Okay.
Because I think that Matthew Golden and Tetro McMillan are locks. I think they will go in the first round. I would be surprised if either of them slipped out of the first round. The guys that are kind of in that orbit afterwards are Emeka Egbuka and Luther Burden. Now, for me, I rank Egbuka ahead of Matthew Golden, but I think the NFL is a little higher on number one, just his ability to run. Obviously, we saw the 40, and he really does have like vertical route chops. But I just think he's kind of capped out. I think both these guys are number two receivers, Egbuka and Golden. But Egbuka is just so quarterback friendly. He's a dirty work guy. He gets open against zone coverage. Both these guys get open against zone coverage. But Egbuka, I think, it gives you a little bit more reliability as a catcher. He gives you more reliability in terms of that separation underneath, whereas Matthew Golden's more that vertical player. So I just think that Egbuka is a little quarterback friendly, but a little quarterback friendlier than Golden is. But he's a guy that I rank ahead of him. But I could see him slipping to the second round just because not everybody loves the power slot receiver profile like I do. And Luther Burden, man, he is the ultimate grade to the flashes player. You're grading to the flashes, which is obviously not what I do with reception perception. I'm charting all the routes that they run in the sample of games that I take. Mm-hmm. That sort of shows, kind of a mixed product. But the flashes of his are, I think you can see some like Bud Light Malik Nabers in his game because he's a slot-only player, but people forget Malik Nabers is like a 50-50 slot outside guy at LSU. He beats man coverage. He's awesome after the catch, but there's some lapses in his game, no question about it. There's some, there's questions about the character too. That stuff is out there with Luther Burden as well, which he's gonna, it's been told to me, he's gonna lose every single tie against Egbuka and Golden, who are just all high character guys. So I don't know if Burden ends up going the first round. Right now, I think I tend to doubt it, although I wouldn't be surprised because he's very talented. So I think Golden and Tet are locks, and then Egbuka, I think, should personally go in the first round. I don't know if the NFL agrees with me.
Have you gotten around to doing work on Isaiah Bond yet? We've heard this week that he was visiting the Bills, so kind of curious, and I'll bet Bills fans are curious to hear your opinion on him.
Yeah, baby, there's another lid lifter, right? And that is a speed guy. And I think which is when you look at this Bills receiver room, for me, I do think, they need an outside. I think they need more outside receivers so that they can move Keon Coleman around. That's basically what they wanted Amari Cooper to be. There was a moment there when Cooper first got to the Bills and they were able to kind of move Coleman a little bit more around from that X receiver position. I was like, this is going to work. It just obviously did not sustain itself for a variety of reasons with Amari Cooper. So I'd love to see somebody like that. But again, I think beyond just an outside presence, I think what they need is some speed. And Isaiah Bond brings speed. I think he's probably like a day two receiver to me. I'm not that excited about Isaiah Bond. I think he's a limited application player. He's also another guy that there's some character questions and things of that nature. So I really don't have a good sense of his draft range and where he is going to go. I think he's probably like a day two talent because he can give you speed and he can give you some separation ability. I just wonder where he ends up going in the draft. But thinking about speed and like verticality. Man, I think Jalen Noel would look good in a Buffalo Bills uniform, but that's just kind of like one of my guys this year.
Matt, just a couple more minutes if you have it. My guys on ADP chasing are often bringing up the name Jack Besh. It seems like there might be two kinds of people in the world, Jack Besh guys and everybody else, because I hear a lot about him, just kind of the hype. Are you in on him?
There's Jack Besh guys, and then there's losers, and I'm not going to be among the losers. I like Jack Besh a lot. No, man, this guy's... He's just a good football player, straight up. What's the ceiling on him? I'm not sure about that, but he looks like a guy that would be a great fit in one of these Rams offenses. Tough physical player, can play out of multiple alignments, good route runner, gets open, tough. Just I really like his game, man. He's a fun player that I think lands in the right spot, and we could see him just get pummeled with volume. He's definitely somebody that I think can play outside. He played outside a lot at TCU, and I thought has some real man coverage ability. His profile, when it goes live on the site, it's not probably not going to be in this next drop, but maybe the one the week after that. People are going to like what they see. I really think he's a good player that I don't know where, again, another player I struggle to see like where he's going to go. But just because honestly, in this draft class, the only thing I will fight people on is that Travis Hunter is the best receiver in the class. Mm-hmm. Everything else, I think, is kind of up for debate. I'm not going to go hard in the paint for any of these guys because I think there's just – it's what skill set do you like when it comes down to teams, who else is in your room. So for that reason, guys like Jack Besh, I'm not quite sure where he's going to go in the draft. Just holistically, as somebody that doesn't have to fill out a wide receiver room, I think he should be a second-round pick. I'm a big fan.
All right. I can buy all that. If I hear one more time how he led 2021 LSU in catches with neighbors on the team and Brian Thomas on the team.
We don't need to hear that. We don't need to hear that anymore. But
got it.
People are going to keep saying it.
It's interesting.
It's an interesting piece of trivia the first time you hear it. But I'm with you, Mike, that I've heard it about 10 times now.
Enough.
I've probably said it. Like three of those 10 times, but I've heard it. So,
yeah. Well, it's pretty good.
It's a win for me because I hadn't heard that. So okay. This is why you keep repeating things, because you're always going to find someone who's going to go, "Hey, that was news to me."
All right. So watch out if you're hanging around with Bulldog in the coming weeks.
I'm going to be dropping that everywhere now. Right
here it comes,
Matt. Just for old time's sake, just we're 20 minutes into a conversation here, and we've not mentioned Stephon Diggs for obvious reasons. But like, that's when we first got to know you. I feel like, and certainly that's the case for me. I think for Mike as well. When the Bills traded for Diggs back in 2020, what do you think of him signing in New England?
I like it for old time's sake, and yeah, he's still in the division, so you guys will still have to think about him. Man, I really like the signing for New England. Number one, let's just get this out of the way. Like the weeping and gnashing of teeth about what he was paid. Who cares?
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knix, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
Like, New England has more money than they can possibly spend right now from a cap space perspective. Well, who are they missing out on by paying Stephon Diggs? Maybe they overpaid him, whatever. It's not my money. As my buddy Patrick Claibon from the NFL Network said to me on my show, they're not going to donate it to a children's hospital. So what do I care about what they're paying him? I think that's a good way of looking at it. So, number one, I don't really care about what they paid him. And honestly, it's just they needed somebody in that room. And what I think is the most interesting thing about Diggs right now is that, you guys know this, and we talked about it last year, He definitely was a declining player in his final year in Buffalo. We saw that step down. But when we're talking about Stephon Diggs, as you guys know, and as we talked about all these years, we're talking about one of the best performers in the reception perception era from a success rate versus man press zone coverage perspective. So the decline is still like, yeah, it's a step down, but it's still very much like a starting level receiver. And what I thought was interesting about him last year in Houston, he took more snaps in the slot than he had since his second season with the Minnesota Vikings. In my opinion, I think most of that was because of who the other guys were in the room, like we're saying with all these prospects. They have a true X receiver in Nico Collins and a vertical flanker in Tank Dell. You needed a slot receiver. Diggs was able to do that. I don't think he has to do that for the Patriots. 67th percentile success rate versus man coverage last year in reception perception with the Houston Texans for Stephon Diggs. Obviously, there's an injury question. What's he going to look like coming back from it? But I think the film last year, whether that's still relevant or not, again, coming off a torn ACL, did show that he can still play outside as a flanker and beat some man coverage.
Matt, thank you so much for today. Receptionperception.com. It seems that the site is just doing great. The videos are great. You're connected with players. So lots to like from Matt's content. Anything else I should mention?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's almost like we've been doing this for a while now, Mike. And I appreciate yes. you guys as always having me on. And, yeah, the Bills always give us something to talk about from the wide receiver perspective. So I'm really interested to see how this room fills out this year.
Me too. Thanks again, Matt.
Always appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Likewise. Matt Harmon on the West Her Hotline. What do you like there? He mentioned Aya Manor, who I like.
Mm-hmm.
He likes a lot of these guys, you know, second, third round, and that's probably if the Bills do it, where they would do it.
What was the critique of that of your guy? How did he word that? He's got he's the catch point. Like the phrasing was interesting.
Which guy?
Your guy. Yeah, it was a little
Canadian.
It was a little alarming the way he said. he's got some issues at, and I wanted to remember because it really stood out. And I know you like this player. Not to focus on the one negative thing he said about him, but we'll find that.
I don't watch college football either, but the profile is what I've liked about him and the probable price. Smooth, big enough, catches the ball. Maybe there's something, I mean, I don't know a fraction of what Matt knows, but, you know, do the Bills pick one?
Maybe mistake prone at the catch point is mistake what he prone. Said. There it is. Yeah. Mistake prone at the catch point. Uh-oh. That doesn't sound like a good trait to me for a receiver.
Maybe for a guard.
But he's great. He gets open. He beat his man.
All right.
He's a he's big.
Well,
his quarterback can see him, but when the ball gets there, all bets are off.
This will be good for us if you just keep ripping on him. This will be good for us. Pick a side, everybody. 803-0550, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
A little bit further down the line, Elik Ayomanor out of Stanford is another guy who very mistake-prone at the catch point, to put it nicely. He's got issues in contested situations, but does show you flashes of being a man coverage player and is a pretty good blocker as well, which, you know, in a run-heavy offense like Buffalo's, they probably value. So there's definitely some guys for them if you go further down the board in that X receiver bucket, but players like Jalen Knoll, who, you know, is probably a vertical slot player. It seems like they're kind of overloaded with slot players right now, but he would really bring some of that speed and verticality that I think they're missing right now.
Our guest just before, Matt Harmon. Did that clear things up?
Very mistake prone, even. to be kind.
Listen, you're going to keep ripping this
let's
guy.
Let's hang out. I'm reporting the facts.
No, you are. You are.
That's what the man said. Very mistake prone at the catch point, to be kind.
I'm doing the thing where, based on almost no information or, you know, credibility at all, I decided to like him, and then the expert comes on and doesn't quite, and I'm like, well, he can't be right. What does he know?
Right, good job.
That's the thing I'm doing.
He sounds like he still likes the guy. I don't think he was just being nice to you, but just, you know, very mistake-prone at the catch point seems like a more significant flaw than Matt let on there, I guess I would say myself.
And he brought him up.
Right.
Like, I didn't ask him about Ayomanor. Right. He brought him up.
Right.
But, you know, we do this as people. I get it. You know this stuff, and I don't, but still.
Right.
I already decided. I already decided I was right. You can't talk me off of this.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, thank you. It's about having courage of your convictions.
Yeah, that's right. Don't worry about being presented with other facts and or opinions that are contrary that should perhaps move a reasonable person off of your point of view. Just dig in.
I want to compare this to something like about religion, where I just have some weird belief. And joining us now on the Western Hotline is the Pope, who comes on and just like, yeah, that's not how it is. That's not it.
I think they should give communion at the beginning of the Mass. Pope, what do you think?
I don't know. That ain't it. Well, now what do? I thought this. This is going to be tough.
Mom, all right. Mom, I'm sorry. I just said Pope. What do you think?
You're supposed to. It's okay. Little, like your so, holiness
sounds
or
a little
like
flippant
that.
To be addressing the Pope, and I just want to apologize to my mom.
Okay, let's move on. Louis is with us. Hello.
Hey guys, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Louis. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, nice to hear from you too, Bulldog. Listen, a little while ago you had Sal Capaccio on, and he was talking about the James Cook situation, saying that, you know, he understands James Cook, you know, he wants more money, and it's a business, on both sides. But the Bills still have the leverage, and I know it can go either way. But what I'm saying is the Bills got him for a second-round pick, and he's a two-time Pro Bowler. So, you know, it's not so easy to say, well, he's going to sell his house, he's going to do whatever hell he wants, because it doesn't work that way. I'm saying with this draft coming up with the Bills, if I get a second-round pick, bottom end second, at the very least it's going to be top third round or the very top of the third round somewhere around that area, I would consider it. But still, I say to him, look, you play out the fourth year of your contract. Mm-hmm. By the way, it's $5.3 million.
Yep.
He sits out. That's a lot of money for a rookie. So he's got to come up, put his big pants on. If he wants to go play somewhere else, that's for the Bills to decide. But he's going to play good on that last year, because whether he stays with Buffalo or goes somewhere else, he's got to make himself known. I think that the Bills will give him the money, use a transition tag or franchise tag down the road if he has a good year. But you know what? He can't do anything. The Bills right now have the cards, and I want to stay on the and hear your response.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely how I feel about it. I felt that way all along here, that they have the leverage. You know, Cook isn't powerless, but sitting out does not do anything for him. Like, he's not going to toll his contract. Like, he's not going to waltz into free agency if he doesn't come and play. So, you know, you don't like it to get to that point where the player is begrudgingly coming to work because he's got to get through it. Like, you'd like everything to be more harmonious than that. But I think that's the most likely outcome. It's my favorite outcome. I like Cook just fine as a player, but I don't want to pay a running back that money. I wouldn't want to pay Saquon Barkley the money Philadelphia's paying him. I know it works, and I know they won the Super Bowl, so I sound like a lunatic saying that, but I just don't think that's good team building. So I'd like to avoid that if I can, and I think the best way to do that is to not do an extension here, unless he compromises severely on what he's looking for, and kind of call his bluff to an extent. And I would expect him to do what the caller is suggesting. He'll do, come in and play, and then go off into the sunset. And that's fine by me. Like, just keep assembly lining these running backs in and out. I'm all right with that. I know it's not complimentary to the player and good for them. I don't think it's the fairest thing in the world, but it's where we are. It's the way the world works in that league. And even with the change in the way some running backs have been paid here, Cook to me doesn't meet the threshold of a guy that should be at the top of the market. So I'm simply not going to want to do it, and I don't want my favorite team to do it.
I wonder, here's maybe a new slant to this, because we're back, you know, both of us are kind of back saying the same things for another day, as it's still only April 3rd. I wonder if the length of the contract is like maybe a bigger sticking point than the average annual value. Like, everybody's getting paid. I think negotiations in the NFL this year lately go like this. The player asks for a deal and the team says, okay. I think that's what the Bills things have been mostly. I mean, I know I'm obviously going all the way, but I think it's just really easy for these deals to get done because of the cap boosts again, and there's more coming. Just, all right, fine. Because, you know, later, what does everybody say now when they talk about Jamar Chase or they talk about Micah Parsons? If you wait, it's going to be a lot more expensive. So let's just do it now, and that'll be true, and we'll look good down the road. So is it such a thing on principle for being in the Bills to be off of $15 million for this guy when the Barkley re-up did happen and the success that Philly, Baltimore, Green Bay with their Houston, all playoff teams, Super Bowl winner, veteran running backs, Buffalo with Cook.
Yep.
Is it really such a thing on principle that they wouldn't do that or at least come close to it? Maybe if they come close to it, it gets done. You might think so. So possibly the Bills' bigger issue could be we don't want to pay him $12 million a year when he's 29. Like, that's what we're afraid of, because that's also been who they've been. I mean, they have drafted day two guys, including Cook. They've been successful. That seems like a thing that they do that's worked.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll see that again. That'd be really interesting if they do that this year. But still, like, that's kind of been their MO. And when time's up. Singletary was also a good player on a great team. And they're like, nope, goodbye. Moss, they traded. Who did they get for Moss?
The
Colts.
The kick returner.
Hines.
Yeah.
Like, they traded Moss before it came up. They dumped Singletary. And wouldn't it tell you that kind of the plan here would be to dump Cook? Like, we'll just keep bringing in somebody 22, 23 years old. And he doesn't, this point comes up, and it can be looked at either way, he doesn't have the size for the big workload. The Bills have not. I mean, they're trying to win a championship here. How they use him tells you. Their actions speak.
Yep.
So they don't see him as a workhorse, and paying a guy like that, they've certainly gotten plenty of mileage out of him, plus, you know, multiple playoff games every year. I don't know. I wonder if they don't want to make a 3-year or 4-year commitment, bottom line. And maybe they would do $15 million a year for 2 years or for one. But why would the player wouldn't want that. The player, this is the Dalvin Cook lesson. This is James Cook's moment, or next year is. I also would say, to one of the caller's points, I mean, it is a lot of money to walk away from, and I bet he doesn't do that. I bet he plays. But he also saves his body if he doesn't, you know, camp or preseason or just 200 right. carries again. Like, it's not necessarily bad for his value.
But the problem is, if you don't, that's definitely true. No wear and tear because you're not playing, but you're still going to be standing in the same spot you were. Yeah, I mean,
if he doesn't come in at all.
Right. The year doesn't just disappear. Like,
yeah.
You're kind of stuck.
I don't expect that to happen.
So, no, me either. And you were right, by the way, about his contract really jumping up. His base salaries year over year, $700,000, $970,000, $1.1, and now this year, $5.2.
This year will be more than all the money he's made so far.
Right.
Where he can't get those cords tucked away on that picture of his house.
Right.
Now he can afford to do that. Now we can afford to have a cord guy.
Get a cord guy, buddy.
Get a cord guy. Jimbo. Thanks, Louie. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. We'll talk some more after this break on WGR. Welcome back. So far today, we've been, again, into the James Cook conversation. House is for sale, apparently. So does that mean anything? I still want to know about Benford and Shakir and Bernard, whether their houses are for sale. Because if I had a jump in pay like that, I think the house would be on the market the next day. I don't know if I really mean that, but you know. Now, you're going way up here. And Cook is already going way up in salary. So maybe he's moving on, or maybe he's just moving up. It's not a huge house. I think I can say that. I mean, for an NFL star, it's not a huge house.
Sure, I agree.
2,000 square feet-ish.
Yeah, shoot, my house is 2,000 square feet.
Yeah, there it is. You're the Bulldog, but still, that's a fair,
that's right.
Fair enough.
That's right. I've been making millions for years.
It's all those ads you do.
Yeah.
Joe is next. Hello, Joe.
Hey, I have a comment about cookbooks. You guys have time for a quick trivia question for you guys?
Hoping it's good.
It's good. So who are the two most infamous people in Buffalo sports lore history with the last name of Anderson? And why are they infamous?
Infamous?
I'm not sure this is a trivia question.
That sounds like an opinion question, really.
I know. Let's call it a...
You tell us.
Okay. So the first one, John Anderson, took over for Punch Imlach in 1978 between December and June. They were like 500. They fired Imlach, and he took the team to the playoffs, and then he got let go. Or he went back to being a scout right after that. So that's one. And then for the Bills, Gary Anderson, famously drafted in '82, missed 5 field goals in preseason, and many people think did it on purpose and ended up being one of the best kickers of all time. In fact, the only kicker who ever made every field goal and every point PAT in a single season for Philly.
For Minnesota.
Was it Minnesota? Okay.
Then he missed the kick to take them to send them to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, then he missed a big kick at the end. Yeah, right.
Okay, all right. Just thinking about the running back position, and I know you talked about it a lot earlier last year that you felt that things were shifting a little bit, and I think McDermott said they're trying to get ahead of it, and it seemed like the running back was all of a sudden becoming a much more important position. It kind of didn't end that way last year, but do you think they're thinking about that maybe a little bit more than they would have last year or the year before?
Well, I mean, I don't know about league trends or anything like that, but they did, like you alluded to, look like they were, I mean, it felt right to me to think they were going to be more of a running team last year, and they were successful, which I think only means that I doubt they really want to move on from this player. I just think there's a possibility that they think they might have to. I mean, really, nothing about his performance dictates that they need an upgrade. He's not the best, but he's good enough. And, you know, they have a winning formula with him on the field. And Johnson and Davis. So common sense would tell you they'd want to keep that together, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the trend in the league is worth considering, but it is also, at the same time, I think important to note how the Bills have used Cook to this point. And I would understand any team not wanting to pay a running back who plays less than half the time for me a top-of-the-market contract. Because a lot of the guys, not all of them, but a lot of the guys, like Barkley's, what, 80% of the snaps or more than that? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I know.
70-something.
78
yeah.
or 78. Something. Yeah, it was close to 80.
Yeah.
Close enough for me to want to round it up, I guess, to exaggerate the point, even if just subtly.
Nice try.
That matters a lot, I think, in this. You know, you're not talking about a guy that you would pay and then because I'm going to use him so much more. He's so good and so effective, and he really made our offense hum. We got to get him on the field 78% of the time. He's not built that way. Like, I don't think that's a guy you want to play that much. And then you want to talk about buyer's remorse. You want to regret a huge contract extension for a running back, have him something happen to him right away. I mean, I know that can happen to anybody, but it's just not a guy you want to make into a guy that carries the ball that much. And right there, I'm already at, okay, well, then I'm out. I don't want to pay you a big market rate contract. It just doesn't work that way for me. You know, that's where I am. The Bills could find their way to a number that they like a lot more than even I do. I'll tell you that. And I guess I want to be rooting for that because I do think Cook has value for them, and they are in a Super Bowl window here. I mean, I'd like to assume they could replicate his production, but I don't know it, you know. But I'm also not assuming Cook is going to produce like he did last year. That's a big part of the reason why I'm reluctant to do a contract now with him. He's coming off a career year in touchdowns. And that's the ultimate buy high moment. I don't want to do that.
803-0550. Thanks, Joe. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, back with more after sports. This is WGR.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.